Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. I am Jason Powell. And coming up after this brief break for non-members, my full review of Tuesday's WWE SmackDown Live, featuring the return of Ric Flair to television, as well as the Raw wrestlers responding to Under Siege. Tuesday's WWE SmackDown was the go-home show for Sunday's Survivor Series pay-per-view. Join me for live coverage on Sunday, beginning with the needlessly long two-hour kickoff show, 4 Central, 5 Eastern time is the start time for the needlessly long two-hour kickoff show. And, of course, stick around for live coverage of the actual SmackDown event. Brace yourselves, it's a four-hour show. That's what it's slotted as on the WWE Network page. Could even go longer, you never quite know with them, but live coverage on Sunday night, plus John Moore will be covering the NXT TakeOver War Games event live on Saturday night. .NET members are going to hear audio reviews of both of those shows. Jake Barnett and I will get together on Sunday night to discuss Survivor Series, and I will most likely be flying solo on Saturday evening reviewing the NXT TakeOver event. Should be a really fun weekend at .NET, and if you were interested in membership, you want to enjoy ad-free access to those live reviews and everything we do on the member side of things, visit our main page at ProWrestling.net, click into the sign-up area, and you will find three different pricing options available. A great time to sign up. This looks like a fun event this weekend, and we're going to have a ton of audio, including Brian Fritz of BetweenTheRopes.com and Sporting News joining me for the .NET Weekly audio show, and I guarantee you we'll spend a lot of time discussing the Survivor Series event. I'm looking forward to that, most likely on Thursday for .NET Weekly this week. And while we're in plug mode, be sure to check out Wade Keller's Pro Wrestling Podcast at podcast1.com. His guest will be .NET's own Jake Barnett, discussing SmackDown, which Jake covers live on Tuesday nights at ProWrestling.net. This is Jake, I believe, his second appearance on the show, and we're kind of taking Keller's podcast under siege because I will be the guest on the show that will air on Thursday. So Jake on Wednesday, me on Thursday. Again, it's the Wade Keller ProWrestling.net podcast at podcast1.com. Just a quick in-house note, this was supposed to be a member-exclusive audio review. Jake and I actually get together this afternoon, and I recorded nearly 30 minutes of audio to discuss last night's Raw and look ahead to SmackDown, and I'm not making this up. Jake was remarkably accurate when it came to his predictions for what they were going to do on tonight's show, including the Raw invasion in the middle of a New Day and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn match. He got the two title match predictions right. He was on fire. Unfortunately, we lost the audio. I think it probably had to do with a Mac update today, but I won't bore you with the details, but I go to get the file, and it's usually right there. Haven't had any issues since we switched to this this recording setup, and got an error message, and the recording that we did was for 1 second. So, here we are now. And the good news is you get to hear my full-length review of SmackDown, and note that these are available on Tuesday nights after the show, my Raw review available for members on Mondays after the show, and the list goes on. We cover all the major television shows in pro wrestling in audio form exclusively for the members. Sometimes you guys hear them on the all-access side at pwaudio.net, but they are there every week for the members. Oh, hey, one more thing to plug, and then I promise we'll get into it. ProWrestling.net Live is back on Monday, 3 Central, 4 Eastern. I have confirmed that Will Pruitt will be joining me as the co-host for that show, as he normally does. Once in a while, life gets in the way. Really, work gets in the way for Will, but he will be joining me as the co-host. We look forward to taking your calls at pwaudio.net again on Monday, 3 Central, 4 Eastern, the day after Survivor Series. We try to do those the day after all of the WWE pay-per-view events. So I look forward to hearing from you guys and getting your thoughts on SmackDown, on Survivor Series, and then looking ahead to Raw and SmackDown. As for this SmackDown, we're finally getting to it. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Spectrum Center. The big moments of the show, the Raw, I guess their version of Under Siege, attacking the SmackDown crew at the very end of the night. And I would say even bigger, in many ways, was the return of Ric Flair to WWE television. That occurring after his daughter Charlotte defeated Natalya to win the SmackDown Women's Championship. She cut a nice promo afterward, talking about how she'd worked so hard to get to this moment. Since the day she was moved over to SmackDown, it's what she wanted was that championship. And she said she knew that her father was at home watching on television. And then his entrance music ended up playing before she could make it to the back. And he came out looking pretty good, all things considered. Yeah, the suit looks a little big on him. I'm sure he's down some weight. But even compared to some of those early photos that were coming out that I think he put out there, or his family and friends, whatever, he's looking better. So that's great. It was great to see. It should not surprise anyone that Rick was crying, and I have a feeling there were a lot of people who were crying with him. It was a cool moment to see Ric Flair back, given that life-threatening medical situation that he went through. It was a very cool moment. I really enjoyed that. And then no change as far as the secondary champ or secondary non-title match, I guess it would be, at Survivor Series, because Baron Corbin ended up retaining the U.S. Championship when he faced Sin Cara. So yes, it's going to be heel versus heel, Miz against Baron Corbin, coming up at Survivor Series. All right, now that we got the bigger stuff out of the way, let's kind of work our way through this. Shane McMahon was rallying the troops. They were backstage, and he's giving this big pep talk about they're no longer the B show, they're the show. And the SmackDown wrestlers were there, and they were yelling along with Shane, all fired up. Not all of them, I don't believe, but many of the SmackDown crew was there. Some of them chimed in a little bit. Becky Lynch was one, and she said that Asuka had said she would break the entire SmackDown roster, but the only thing broken come Sunday would be Asuka's arm. Shane asked Baron Corbin if he's going to shut up The Miz once and for all, and he said Sunday would be his end of days. Sin Cara was like, I think, a couple of people over and just kind of stood there. There's not, you can't even, that's, I don't like the guy's mask. You can't even get like any kind of expression. Some of those masks, like, you can at least see the mouth, or you just get a better look at the eyes, and so they're able to react a little bit, just kind of show you something. Where him, it's just you don't even know what he could possibly be thinking because of the mask. And I get it from a storytelling standpoint that he can use that to his advantage, but when you're trying to get the guy over, not so much. Anyhow, I mean, it really was just a rally the troops kind of a moment, and New Day kind of helped him out with it, leading them in a SmackDown Rocks chant. Then we found out the or we got the broadcast team of Tom Phillips, Corey Graves, and Byron Saxton. Daniel Bryan made his entrance, and this was his first appearance, I believe, since Kane choke slammed him through a table. And he did talk about the Raw versus SmackDown rivalry. Not too much to this. I mean, it seemed like in this segment he'd kind of come around that, before it was like he was playing the pacifist. He wasn't crazy about what Shane did behind his back as far as going to Raw and doing that. But there really wasn't much talk about that here. He did get to it, though, in a backstage segment, which we'll address in a little bit. But he ended up introducing AJ Styles as the new WWE champion, and then he played his advocate for the evening. And this was great. He was a better advocate on this night than Paul Heyman was on Monday night for Brock Lesnar. I'm not kidding. Paul Heyman's great. And some of it too. You had somebody deciding, hey, now's the time to propose, right in the middle of a Paul Heyman promo on Raw, which was weird. And I still say, if that person is out there, or if you know that person and you know the story, I'd love to hear why, in the middle of a Paul Heyman promo, this person decided to propose. But no, I seriously thought Daniel Bryan was just excellent here. I'm sure a lot of this is that, Brock Lesnar has been a dream opponent for Daniel Bryan. If you've read his interviews, he's talked a lot about that. And so I'm guessing, once or twice, at least in his life, he's thought about what he might say if he were facing Brock Lesnar. And I think he was able to apply that nicely here. This was as hard as I think anyone has really gone at Brock Lesnar in WWE, talking about how he mentally quits, referring to the knee bar that Frank Mir took him out with in his first MMA fight. He made, I don't remember the exact wording he used, but he just made it seem like it was weak. There wasn't much to the knee bar. Just saying that AJ Styles is going to take him to the limit and beat him on Sunday. I'm not even doing this justice. He was terrific here. I thought this was Daniel Bryan's best mic work since his career ended, his in-ring career. They don't ask him to go out there and do things like this on SmackDown. He's just kind of happy-go-lucky, nice guy, babyface authority figure. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it was really cool to see him get something that he could sink his teeth into again. I thought he did a great job with this. AJ chimed in at the end a little bit as well, saying that unlike Brock, he's not a puppet. He could actually talk. And he said that on Sunday he agreed with Paul Heyman that he would be the underdog and he wouldn't have it any other way. And he said he would prove that SmackDown is the A show and that the house that AJ, and that is the house that AJ built. So not a whole lot from Styles, but quite frankly, we didn't need much. I mean, I even said regarding the Paul Heyman promo, I was already sold going in. Didn't matter what he said. And Daniel Bryan somehow made me even a little bit more excited about that match. I mean, this is definitely a match that I'm excited for. I'm looking forward to seeing Brock Lesnar and AJ Styles. I think it's going to be a really fun dynamic with those two, the size difference, AJ's speed, just, you know, how they go about laying out this match. It's, you hear the words dream match thrown around quite a bit. This really is one of them for a lot of wrestling fans. And so it's one that I'm really anxious to see come Sunday. I think it's going to be fun. But the point is that, you know, Daniel Bryan did such a good job. I was already completely fired up for this match, looking forward to it, and he somehow got me even looking forward to it even more. I mean, it was really good work by Daniel Bryan here. Then we went to AJ Styles walking backstage. I believe this was after commercial break, and Jinder Mahal was there waiting for him, and he said that after Brock Lesnar rips him in half, he would pick up the pieces and pin him to regain his WWE Championship. Styles just kind of ignored him, walked away, didn't respond. I still wonder, are we going to see, I thought Jinder would end up being like the fifth man on the SmackDown team, basically it wasn't that I thought Jinder was going, I thought, okay, whoever loses the AJ and Jinder match last week is going to end up being that fifth man, and of course it's not. It ended up being John Cena, so that leaves Jinder without anything official to do at Survivor Series. So it's certainly possible that he gets involved in this AJ Styles-Brock Lesnar match, something to keep an eye on Sunday. The opening match of the show was Baron Corbin defeating Sin Cara in 7:14 to retain that U.S. Championship. He did so with End of Days. I thought this was a good match. I do have a hard time really caring much about Sin Cara. It's just both guys who played the character so far have lost so many matches, and you know, again, the mask thing, and I think we've heard from the character once, and it was recently, but I do give them credit. You know, over the last few weeks, they've done this kind of fairly predictable thing where something happens to prolong thing. At first, it was kind of a surprise. It was like, why is Sin Cara getting a count-out win over the new U.S. champion who just beat AJ Styles? But, you know, over the last couple of weeks, they've kind of reinforced that. And, you know, for just an undercard program, I think it's turned out to be okay. And then you add to that that a lot of fans were looking at the Survivor Series lineup thinking, yeah, they're not going to go heel versus heel. There's a good chance that a babyface ends up winning one of the secondary championships. And, you know, for Sin Cara, it just made him feel like more of a threat to actually beat Baron Corbin. They didn't do it, and I'm happy they didn't. Miz and Corbin is interesting. I didn't want to see a bunch of heel versus heel matches on this show, but there's one. And, you know, I don't know that it's going to be pretty, but I do look forward to seeing how they go about doing this on Sunday with Miz and Corbin. It's unique. It should be fun. Then we had a commercial break, and they followed this up with kind of a recap video of everything that's happened with Raw and SmackDown. We had Daniel Bryan talking with Shane McMahon backstage about Survivor Series, and Shane talked about the most important thing for his brand was cohesion. Daniel Bryan agreed. Shane started to talk more, but Bryan cut him off and said that after Sunday, they need to have a conversation. And Shane asked him what about, and Bryan said cohesion. He said that Shane never consulted him about the raid that they did on Raw, and as a result, he was assaulted by Kane while trying to make peace. Shane tried to apologize, but Bryan just said he'd see him on Sunday. So still some tension there with Shane and Daniel Bryan. Another, even if nothing comes of it, that's another little storyline to pay attention to on Sunday. I don't know if they really do have something planned for this. I would hope that they're not going to turn one of them heel. But, I'm not sure where this is going, but if the idea, it may be as simple as just another little wrinkle to follow. Like if fans are kind of thinking that there's going to be some sort of interference in one of the big two matches on the show, well, could Bryan turn against SmackDown because of Shane? I don't know how many people are buying into that, but certainly the Jason Jordan thing on Monday's Raw leads me to believe that there's a chance that Jordan ends up getting involved in that match, and I hope they don't have him do that. I just think I would save that, his reaction, whatever he does to Kurt Angle, for post-Survivor Series, but they may see it differently. Charlotte made her entrance, and they went to a commercial break. Natalya made her entrance, and then in the second match of the night, it was Charlotte defeating Natalya to win the SmackDown Women's Championship. 12 minutes and 33 seconds was the match time that Jake had in his report. I enjoyed this. You know, it's been quite some time now that anytime Charlotte and Natalya end up being booked in a match, I think, like many people, I think back to that great match they had at TakeOver. And it was really the match that put Charlotte on the map because, you know, she was in NXT or, the, you know, in developmental, and it's like you knew she's Ric Flair's daughter, and obviously that puts her on the map right there. But I mean, just you weren't quite sure at that point in her career how good of a job she could do in the ring. And it was like, oh man, Natalya's got her work cut out for her here. She's going to have to carry this, Ric Flair's daughter to a passable match. And they went out there and killed it. They did such a good job. It was, I felt like it was the show-stealing match, and it was just a blast to watch. But we really haven't seen them have a really good, memorable match since then. And that match is going to be more memorable just because of, you know, different circumstances, basically. But I really did enjoy this match. I thought this was the best I can remember them doing since that TakeOver match. And there was some good drama down the stretch. Natalya had Charlotte in the sharpshooter, and Charlotte got close to the ropes, and Natalya dragged her back in the middle of the ring. But Charlotte was still able to power her way to the ropes, and eventually she applied the figure eight and got the submission win in her hometown. Yes, Charlotte won in Charlotte, and you'd think, like, well, in normal circumstances, like, oh yeah, that makes sense. You want to please the crowd, and it's a good place to do it. It's just WWE, that whole hometown curse thing that they've created, so I'm happy to see them go against that. And as I mentioned, it did create that cool moment afterward. Not only her promo was good, she was emotional, she was believable, she was, like, in tears or on the verge of tears. And I thought that was well done. And then you add in that, you know, her father ended up coming out after she'd kind of told the crowd, kind of swerved them by saying that he was at home watching the show on TV as he does every Tuesday. I just thought it was a really nice moment, and genuinely an emotional moment, as genuine of an emotional moment as you'll see on WWE television. So very well done. From there, we went to a Bludgeon Brothers vignette. They're still running around the woods, and Luke Harper still has really bad teeth, and they're still talking about destroying all sorts of people and things. But they do debut next week, so we'll get to see what the Bludgeon Brothers are all about. I continue to hope that it's not just, well, they're kind of foils for the comedy tag team Breezango. I'm hoping there's more to it than that. Now that the Usos are apparently babyfaces, you know, they're going to need some opponents to work with, and I think giving them strong opponents in the Bludgeon Brothers to work with should be more of a priority than coming up with some cutesy comedy stuff for Breezango, who kind of disappeared now. They were not part of this show. Then it was time for the third match of the show. This was a singles match. It was Jimmy Uso defeating Chad Gable in 6:55. You had the respective partner Shelton Benjamin and Jey Uso in the corner. This was fine. Nothing really wrong with the match. Jimmy was able to hit a super kick for the win. I mean, they're trying to follow up on last week's tag title match where I think it was Gable ended up taking out the knee of one of the Uso brothers, and then they didn't really follow up on it. They just called for the bell. It just was kind of an oddly booked match, I guess is the best way to put it. And So I get that they're kind of trying to follow up on that, but it was only 6 minutes and 55 seconds. It's just like, you couldn't have come up with something a little more geared to Survivor Series. This just didn't feel like it was. Now, at the same time, let's see. Maybe there's a reason for it. When we watch Survivor Series, we'll be like, oh, that's why they did that. That's why they had that match and kept that Usos and Gable and Benjamin storyline fresh in our head. You know, you never quite know. But yeah, just watching it play out as it did, I'm just like, eh, this just didn't need to be on the show. Then you had the broadcast team talking about Survivor Series. They did announce that the fifth member of the women's team would be revealed on Sunday. And as Jake pointed out, he thinks it's either Natalya or a returning Paige. And he said his guess is Paige, who would then feud with Charlotte. Now, there was a lot of buzz this week that Paige was going to be named the fifth member of the Raw team. Didn't happen. Could they have called an audible and moved her to SmackDown? Will it be as simple as, it's just Natalya and they debut, re-debut Paige after the pay-per-view? Not sure, but something to keep an eye on. I think it's one more little hook for Survivor Series, a show that, quite frankly, I don't think needs one. I just think it's they've done, as much as I'm kind of down on this whole Raw versus SmackDown concept in general, they've done a really nice job of setting this up as a show that, at least from my perspective, I'm looking forward to it. Then we went to Sami Zayn talking with Kevin Owens backstage. Sami not happy that they didn't even have a Survivor Series match. Kevin Owens blamed Shane McMahon for this, and they ended up they're happy-go-lucky together because it was still, they talked about it, the A show, the B show didn't matter. It was all about the Sami and Kevin show, is what Owens said, and Sami corrected him and said, it's the Kevin and Sami show, and then they headed off for their match with New Day. New Day made their entrance, and they delivered a promo, and then we ended up going to commercial break. Coming out of the break, it was New Day facing Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. This match went to a no contest, because that's when The Shield ended up coming out, and I thought we might see Owens and Zayn sneak out a victory, similar to the way Sheamus and Cesaro won the Raw tag titles. They didn't play it that way. It was just the match was over, and I'm okay with that. You know, I mean, could they, you know, New Day could have easily shaken that loss off, no big deal. But, I mean, it could have easily been New Day plowing through these guys. Keep in mind, Zayn and Owens sent home early from the European tour, and here they are a week later, right back in the main event picture on SmackDown and being protected and being given promo time. So whatever that situation was all about, seems like it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, I mean, granted, they're not on the Survivor Series show, at least in a scheduled match, but, you know, could they still play some part on the show? Yeah, absolutely. As for The Shield, they made their entrance through the crowd, and they were wearing shirts that were half their Shield shirt and the other half the Red Raw shirt. Thought it looked kind of dorky. I know what they're going for, but just kind of cheesy for me. But then they cut backstage where the Raw women's team had invaded the SmackDown locker room for the second time in a few weeks now. We've seen that apparently, even in the storyline sense, all the women, baby faces and heels, share the same locker room. Kind of weird. And it's never been, for anyone who's like trying to defend it, well, you know, it is Survivor Series time. There's strength in numbers. They've never really explained it that way. I think if, you know, you want to, if you care enough, you're going to send that message. But it just seems like, no, they're just making it seem like all the women dress together, which of course they do. But I don't know. I'm just, call me old school. I like it when, I like back in the day, you know, in the territory days, you would have, I think Memphis and other places, you'd have separate babyface and heel entrance areas. And I just like that attention to detail. And obviously, things have changed since the territory days, and kayfabe is dead. But I still kind of like within the storyline to make it seem like, yeah, you know, these women can't be in the same room. They, you know, I don't need to know all the details, but don't show me that they all share a locker room together, I guess, is the baby faces and heels. But anyway, a bunch of wrestlers from Raw showed up. Some of the SmackDown wrestlers came out to help. Braun Strowman, and by the way, the Raw women were just dominant over the SmackDown women in that backstage setting. Bayley got to take part in her annual beatdown angle. Yes, lovable Bayley was part of another mob beatdown. This year, at least, it was like, well, their team was attacked first. SmackDown attacked first. Bayley's kind of taking part in responding with her teammates. Where last year, if memory serves, it wasn't that. It was just like the Raw women showed up and Bayley was part of it and took part in a 5-on-1 beatdown. So it was like unprovoked. That I didn't like. But Shane McMahon ended up coming out to help too. He was held down by the Shield. And Kurt Angle was out there. This ultimately led to the Shield giving Shane a triple powerbomb, and then Kurt Angle put Shane down with his angle slam, and Shane was still kind of moving around and looking at Kurt. I'm like, oh my God, just he should be out by now, right? Well, it took another triple powerbomb from the Shield, and he still was kind of looking around and just not really selling it as much as you would think an actual wrestler would. And it was Shane. I don't know if it's just like he didn't do a good job of selling this, if he was scripted that you're a McMahon, damn it, of course you're not going to stay. I don't know, but I did think it looked a little bit, I was rolling my eyes a little bit watching him not just play this as if he was out cold. It just kind of felt like that's what the situation called for. That's what those big moves called for. Kurt Angle watching him, man, we've seen him in the ring now. We've seen him do his thing at the TLC show, and we'll see him again on Sunday. It's a little painful to see him move around. Like, his knees are permanently bent a little bit. It's like he can't straighten out his legs or something. Maybe I'd go back and see some old footage and go, it's not so bad. But I've noticed that the last couple of weeks watching, like, man, it just seems like he... I don't know if it's a back problem, if it's just just the way things went for him. I don't know, but yeah, it just looks like if you look at him, it looks like his knees are always bent, even though he's standing up as straight as he can. Like way bent, not just like a little bit, no big deal. I wouldn't be pointing it out, but it just seems like there's obviously with Kurt, there's a lot of wear and tear there, and I do wonder if that has something to do with it. But putting that aside. Again, I'm not a big fan of, hey, it's that time of year again, let's all of a sudden act like there's this bitter rivalry between Raw and SmackDown, even though we haven't seen it all year long until now. I'm not a big fan of that. I still think it's really clumsy and awkward to have feuding baby faces and heels fighting for the same team for nothing more than brand pride. But they've done a great job of building this pay-per-view up. Not every match in the show, but that is the big two for me are obviously the Lesnar and Styles match, and then also the men's elimination match. Though just loaded with so much star power in there, I'm really looking forward to Sunday. And I'm not someone who looks forward to Survivor Series all that often. The occasional traditional elimination match, yeah, it's fun. But as I've said, you see one that's like, all right, the novelty kind of wears off and you have to sit through more. And, a lot of it is just kind of what's booked for the show more than just the appeal of Survivor Series itself. Where this year, man, this is a loaded Survivor Series. They've really gone all out for this. And I think the icing on the top really is going, making that switch from Jinder to AJ Styles, because I really didn't care about Mahal and Lesnar, whereas Styles and Lesnar, completely different story. Even if it's going to end with a schmoz finish, or even if Lesnar is going to go over clean, whatever, doesn't matter. I'm just looking forward to seeing that match. Don't get me wrong. If Brock wins this thing in like 30 seconds, well, then, I'll be singing a different tune, but I don't think that's the case. I think they're going to go out there and try to deliver a really good match, but I'm just saying it's not so much about the finish for me. I'll worry about that when we see it, that kind of a thing. I'm not even thinking much about it going into the show. I'm just looking forward to seeing whatever we get from AJ Styles and Brock Lesnar. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And again, join me for live coverage on Sunday night at ProWrestling.net. Join us on Saturday night, I should say, for NXT TakeOver coverage as well. John Moore is going to be doing the live coverage of that show. And so it's going to be a really fun weekend. And not quite Wednesday as I record this, so we've still got a lot of fun stuff to go before we get there, including that .NET Weekly audio show. Hey, if you enjoy our All Access Daily podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you take a minute and subscribe, number one, but also leave us a review on iTunes. Ideally 5 stars, but if you could, include some commentary letting us know what you like, what you don't like, it really does kind of help us know what you're looking for, and it would be greatly appreciated. iTunes, anywhere else that takes those types of reviews, you're definitely helping spread the word about the ProWrestling.net website and also our All Access Daily podcast at PWAudio.net. Until next time, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Check back tomorrow for John Moore's review of Kalisto's birthday celebration. My God, that's how they hype 205 Live, and as I mentioned in the hit list, probably more effective than advertising most of the potential matchups, because we've seen them all, and they've run all those wrestlers into the ground. But yeah, I know I'm curious to find out what in the hell they do for an hour to celebrate Kalisto's birthday. John Moore will tell you all about it tomorrow on the All Access Daily Podcast. So until then, everyone, take care.